This is an ABC podcast. Hello and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. My name's Jordan Fennell. Coming up, with the Papua New Guinea election looming, politicians are going to great lengths to impress voters.
You see a lot of colour, a lot of people putting up traditional attire, dancing, feasting as well.
You'll meet the colourful characters vying for votes coming up soon. And Tonga's national netball team have been royally appointed a new name that holds deep significance to the country.
We were very grateful when I received the letter from Her Majesty's private secretary and the explanatory note towards the name, so it was a big wow on our part.
Also, MasterChef winner Justin Narayan takes you on a taste bud tour of Fiji. First, though, when Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong touched down in Solomon Islands, it marked her third visit to the Pacific since being sworn in. It was also Australia's first high-level visit to the Pacific nation since Honiara signed its controversial security pact with Beijing in April. But amid talks between the leaders about the geopolitical situation in the region, there have been calls for foreign powers to shift their attention to families and communities in Solomon Islands and address their needs. Dorothy Wickham is a senior Solomon Islands journalist and was among those who took part in the meetings with Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong in Honiara.
I spoke to her and shared my concerns about the work of the media in Solomon Islands and the support that has been forthcoming from Australia over the last 10, 15 years. And I also spoke about our youth, the need to pay attention to our youth and their aspirations in the country. Well, I felt that Australia needed to boost its assistance to the media in Solomon Islands, and I also pointed out that we do have support from Australia through DFAT and the ABC development arm, the PACPAS project. However, there needs to be a little bit more push towards strengthening the independent media. And I pointed out and I made comparisons of how the media works in the Pacific, because as you know, our national broadcasters usually fall under the portfolio of the Prime Minister, especially here in Solomons, which means that there is sometimes some control in terms of funding and flexibility of how they work. And the mainstream papers are usually privately owned, and we do come under pressure when it comes to political upheavals and also as we experienced during our recent ethnic crisis back in the 2000s.
And speaking about independence in media, you raised concerns over the Foreign Minister of China, Wang Yi, his visit to Solomon Islands, and the media restrictions placed then. Is that also something that you raised with Penny Wong?
Well, that's where we were pointing out the difference between our media and their media. And I also raised the fact that a lot of Pacific journalists now are taking up scholarships in China to study journalism there because it's being offered. And that's where I think Australia needs to step in and fill that gap if we are to maintain the independence of our media.
We also saw during this lunch that you had with Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong, other community and business leaders there. They were all women. Was this an intentional part of the meeting to have all women there?
I think so. I think she wanted to hear what women's concerns were, and I think some of my fellow ladies who were in the group raised the issue of women in parliament, women's right to education, domestic violence. As you know, we have a very high rate of domestic violence in this country. So there were the concerns raised, and also support for women in business, the small and medium enterprises that are here in Solomon Islands. That was raised by the CEO of the Solomon Islands Chamber of Commerce.
Honiara journalist Dorothy Wickham speaking there. Now to Papua New Guinea, where campaigning is underway as the national election draws near. And if you thought politics was boring, think again. Dancing, music and colourful parades are a mainstay of election campaigns in Papua New Guinea. Some politicians are even trying to impress voters by arriving to villages on horseback, and in one case, in a stretch Hummer. So what's it all about? Marin Farr takes a look.
On Papua New Guinea's Manus Island, an election campaign is in full swing. Women, dressed in bright outfits, are dancing to the beat of a traditional drum as about a dozen boats pull up to shore. It's a sunny day and Papua New Guinean flags are flying in the breeze. This marks the start of a campaign rally for the People's National Congress Party in Manus. Later on, party leader and former Prime Minister Peter O'Neill takes part in a local ritual. Two women from Pera village dip leaves in water and sprinkle it over the politician. They call on their ancestors to bring good luck to Mr. O'Neill.
They call them by name, Olikam, and they have placed that water with the ancestors.
Culture is inextricable from politics in Papua New Guinea, and during a national election, it's all on full display.
It's a festival in itself, the campaign period.
Mahalopa Lavelle is a political commentator and lecturer in economics at the University of Papua New Guinea. He says politicians use culture to build rapport with voters.
And you see a lot of colour, a lot of people putting up traditional attire, dancing, feasting as well.
Here's Peter O'Neill talking about his experience on the campaign trail so far.
Cultural practices and dances are a very important part of our culture. We have a very diverse cultural society. When you travel to many different provinces and remote communities right throughout the country, they welcome you with a traditional dance.
Mr. O'Neill is tipped as a key contender to become the country's next Prime Minister. He's up against incumbent PM James Marape. ABC Radio Australia invited Mr. Marape to an interview, but his office didn't respond. As both men vie for the top job, they're using culture to leverage support.
It's very much about building relationships.
Dr. Rosita Henry is an anthropologist whose research focuses on the politics of performance in Papua New Guinea. She says these kinds of performances are not confined to elections.
It's drawing on the ways that people would otherwise build relationships in particular important cultural events.
Take, for example, the ritual that Pera village women performed on Peter O'Neill in Manus. Local Kenny Mayapol explains it's something his people do all the time.
It is simply a ritual carried out on loved ones, like children, to bless them, using water to sprinkle over them and say encouraging words of blessings to them.
He says that ritual has been around for thousands of years. But other candidates are steering away from so-called traditional performances and using other means to grab voters' attention. Images shared on social media show politicians riding into villages on horses, arriving in a stretch hummer, and even travelling by helicopter. Dr. Rosita Henry says it's all about displays of power.
Through the technology you can harness, through the big Land Rovers you can, you know, drive in, or the helicopters you come in, the clothes you're wearing, the resources you can amass.
But for all the colour and celebration, elections in PNG can also have a dark side. Already during this campaign, the country has witnessed large fights related to the election, some leading to deaths. Dr. Rosita Henry says even these violent outbreaks can be thought of like a performance.
People can experience elation in highly charged moments in which they can feel powerful. So, you know, feel elation in the power of the dance, but also elation in the power of, you know, destructive social action as well. And they're two sides of the same coin.
Music there from Manus Island, and before that, cultural anthropologist Dr. Rosita Henry ending Marion Farr's report. Pacific Island countries have been slowly reopening to the world again, and finally, Vanuatu and Solomon Islands will join that process next month. Citizens have been able to enter Solomon Islands since earlier this year, but those on foreign passports have had to get government approval. Meanwhile, Vanuatu's borders have been shut since early 2020, allowing only a small number of residents back in. Dubravka Volida with more.
Melbourne-based Jessie Bugizi moved to Australia 22 years ago, and every year she would travel home to her family. But COVID-19 put an end to her yearly trips home.
I went there for my brother's funeral. After that, I was hoping to go back, I'm planning to go back every year, but it didn't happen. And just the emotional stress that we have for not saying goodbye to our family, some families who have gone, close family members, that was really tough.
But now she's counting down the days until her departure in July with her suitcase already packed.
It's been a long time coming. I've been checking every single month since January, checking all the websites, when we can go home. It was really tough. I'm planning to get on the first plane that goes to Honiara.
According to the World Health Organization, there have been more than 20,000 COVID cases in the country and 149 deaths. Over the past year, only Solomon Island nationals have had permission to travel in and out of the country. But for those on foreign passports, like Ms. Bogisi's, there's been restrictions.
There are newborn babies as well, which we haven't seen. So that would be exciting to go home and see them all.
She will be traveling with two family members from country Victoria. She says her family back home is over the moon.
They have been asking, when are you coming? I keep saying to them, the border's not open. Well, I said to them, your border's not open. So they said, all right, just keep trying. And then finally, I told them only a week ago, my mum's very happy. She said she can't wait to see me.
Vanuatu is also opening its borders next month after closing them in early 2020. It escaped the Delta wave of COVID-19, but the Omicron variant swept through the country this year. Belinda Fireman from Coffs Harbour is going to Port Vila on the first flight out in July. Her 8-year-old daughter is Ni Vanuatu and is beyond happy to see her grandparents again.
So I've been very keen to get back. My daughter is Ni Vanuatu and she hasn't been back to Vanuatu since she was 2.5. She's very excited to get back and connect with her culture and her family.
The 39-year-old says her daughter Malia is strongly identifying with her heritage and is currently doing a school project on Vanuatu. They are planning to stay for 2 weeks.
What I'm looking forward to the most is really supporting my daughter to connect with her culture and her family and seeing Vanuatu through her eyes in the age that she is now.
Flying with them on the 1st of July is Malia's Ni Vanuatu father, Ben Mwele, who lives in the Northern Territory. The 38-year-old was planning to fly back to Ambai Island just before the pandemic hit.
Just before the pandemic, I was planning to go see them, but then happened that the volcano erupted somewhere around 2019-20. And it goes for a while, so all my family's friends, they have to evacuate and to another island. So that was hard for them to start a new life. And also a few of my families, they passed away. It's hard for me not to be able to be at their funerals.
He says he's happy to see his loved ones soon.
I think the thing that I'm looking forward is to see my mom, brother and my sister, just spend time with them. Yeah, I'm a bit excited and also nervous at the same time because few of my families won't recognize me by the time I get home.
Many seasonal workers will also be looking forward to visit their loved ones again. Half Ni Vanuatu and Tongan Peter Foliaki Lokotui works with seasonal workers in Victoria. The 36-year-old is planning to book a flight home next month.
Definitely to go back, but if I'm not able to, continue with our ritual, which is sending the wife and the kids to go back home.
He says while missing out on seeing family has been hard for him, it has been tough seeing seasonal workers deal with homesickness.
The struggles that they have gone through has made mine seem very, very, very small. You know, I get to come home and you know, cuddle my kids. You know, if I have a fight with the wife, I can just, you know, remove myself, you know, calm down and come back and try to, you know, look at the issues. But, you know, we look after workers who, when they have a fight with their partners over the phone, they can't have family there to resolve. And sometimes it escalates to the point where, you know, they take on alcohol, which creates more issues for them.
Having lived in Australia for 18 years, he's been missing his family and the sounds, sights and scents of his home these past 2 years.
The taste of the island food kind of comes up. You know, I just want to be in, you know, my grandma's kitchen, or, you know, with families enjoying a meal together. There's nothing beats, you know, a crystal clear water under a coconut palm, drinking fresh coconut.
Expat Samoans are expected to head home once borders open in August or September, followed by Tonga later in the year.
Dubravka Volida reporting there. Tonga's national netball team have been royally appointed a new name that has a fascinating backstory. Tonga's queen has declared that they will now be known as the Tongan Tala. And as I found out, that name comes from a sea diving bird that holds special significance on the country's outer islands. Most birds lay their eggs in a nest, but not the Tala. This little bird lives life on the edge, and that's also where it lays its eggs.
They just lay eggs on a branch of a tree or a rock. That's the difference of Tala from the other species.
Ava Taumalolo is a Tongan birdwatching tour guide and a conservationist. And yes, you heard that right. The Tala lay their eggs just out on a tree branch or on a rock. He says another way this bird really sets itself apart is with its colour.
Tala is really pure white. It is special because only Tala is really white.
It's this daring and distinctive bird whose name Tonga's national netball team have taken, courtesy of Tonga's queen. After the team took out the championship of the Netball Pacific Oz Sports Series in March this year, they put in a request to the palace for an official name. And Salote Sisifa, the CEO of Tonga Netball, says she was shocked to actually get a reply.
We were very grateful when I received the letter from Her Majesty's private secretary. We received the letter with the name and the explanatory note towards the name. So it was a big wow on our part in terms of culture and everything. This is not the norms that you get to write at that level and, you know, get a reply back in writing. It's very heartwarming.
The Tala bird is a sea diving bird that swoops into the ocean to pick out fish and squid to eat. Ava Taumalolo says its work ethic and skills are some of the most impressive he's ever seen.
The sea bird is really hard-working bird I ever know, because it's really hard for them to find their food. But the land bird, it's easy because they flying around around the trees, they fruit, they pick it. But the sea bird, you had to go and look for a school of fish to find some. You had to dive it down to the water, in the water, and pick it up.
He says that fishermen in Tonga use the bird as a signal to find the best places to fish.
Tala is really special for me. Like when I can see them, I can tell what kind of fish are just underneath the Tala. When it's open water out there, you see Tala flying around there. That's good for the fishermen.
Because of its ability to point people in the right direction, it's become known as a good omen. Salote Sisifa says this is what the Tongan national netball team became for the country during a particularly tough time.
We had just finished the volcanic eruption here and the tsunami that followed it. And, you know, the country was on lockdown, hard lockdown, and nothing was happening at the time. There's a lot of questions arising in terms of politics, you know, pointing fingers and everything. But that week of the girls and the team playing at that level in Australia and the results from it, it really did unify our country. And not only Tongans in Tonga, but also just Tongans worldwide. You know, it was a week where we kind of like just put aside the politics, and it was just everyone was there for our country. Her Majesty giving the name Tala. It was very symbolic of what the team and the girls had done for our country.
She says that the team are honoured to have a name that means so much to Tongans, not only at home, but around the world.
They're really happy that it happened during their time, but at the same time acknowledging past former players that have, you know, walked the hard yards, and you know, these girls and the current team and everything, they've just taken it to another level in terms of performance, recognition and attention from our people and Oceania.
The Tongan Talas are now preparing to head to the Oceania World Cup qualifiers next month. And Salote Sisifa says with a new name to energise them, the girls are excited to continue their winning streak.
our team finally has a name, and we'll go in, and, you know, as the Tongan Salads. So it's a good omen on the team.
Tonga Netball CEO Salote Sisifa ending that report. Now, 2021 MasterChef winner Justin Narayan has been touring Fiji and cooking alongside chefs on the Pacific Island. His trip has coincided with Fiji being nominated for the World Culinary Awards, and our reporter Priyanka Srinivasan caught up with him to hear about the tasty delights that he's been sampling.
Can you tell us what has been the food highlight of your trip to Fiji?
It is so hard just to pick one. Look, I think I'm very biased, but the food my nani, my grandma, cooks is very good. But honestly, the fish, the seafood you get at any restaurant is so fresh. It's literally just come off the boat into a restaurant cooked for you. It's insane. But I did love sails. The fish and the crab curry there was incredible. Kanu was incredible. The coffee at Bulla Coffee was pretty good, like Fijian grown and roasted coffee. I'm going to keep going. There's a huge list.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like, well, I wanted to, you speaking of fish and the fresh food, I understand that you got to cook Fijian kokoda alongside Chef Benny on Turtle Island. Can you tell me more about that experience and the dish itself? Do you have any tips and advice onto making it for ourselves?
Yeah, there's definitely some tips. It was a real cool experience. That fish was literally caught that morning.
Wow.
And he's like, quickly run in the kitchen, I'll show you how to make this dish. And I'm like, yeah, do it. The biggest tip that sets it apart is everything is like fresh, literally. So the coconut is picked, it's grated, it's the coconut cream is made. So you got fresh coconut cream, you got fresh fish, you've got ingredients grown in the island, so it's a hard one to replicate at home, but it just gives it an unbeatable flavor and combination. And that's really how it started. That's the way it's going to be, is like everything's kind of grown, picked, whatever's around. So it was absolutely delicious. The fresh coconut cream, homemade fresh coconut cream, and fresh fish is the big pointers for me.
Yes, I mean, it sounds like pretty much you're saying is just come to Fiji and experience the fresh.
Yeah, we're not going to find coconuts here in Australia, so Fiji is definitely the place to go to get it.
And I wanted to ask, because you yourself have Indo-Fijian heritage, has that influenced you and your own cooking style at all? And did you get to visit those places that your parents come from and try the food there?
Yeah, I did. I did get the opportunity to go and visit the places my mum grew up. My dad is on Anala Island, Lombasa, so I didn't go there. But no, it's had a huge impact on the types of food I create and how I create those foods. And I guess in Fijian culture, kind of every big event revolves around food. Every day really kind of revolves around food. So there's always big family gatherings, family reunions. Weddings, funerals, everything like that going on. So I found myself around food and the kitchen a lot. And that culture of celebration that comes with food, it makes you want to cook, makes you want to eat, you want to share it with other people. So it's had a huge impact on me.
And I know here in Australia, Fijian cuisine, Fijian food is perhaps not so well known. Has it been hard for you to sort of build that and sort of cook local food without, having those amazing ingredients right on your doorstep like you do in Fiji?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely been an education for me, learning about Fijian food, because I think growing up in Australia, kind of like, you want to be Australian, you have that mentality of like, mum would like send like a raw tea and curry to school and be like, no, I want a Vegemite sandwich like everyone else. And you grow up and, it changes. And I think Australia's changed to become more open and accepting, and they're more curious about, different cultures and where people come from and the types of food they have. And I think that's made it easier for me to share that, and it's made me want to learn more about it.
That was MasterChef winner Justin Narayan. And that's it from Pacific Review. My name is Jordan Fennell. Thank you so much for listening, and join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from around the Pacific.